It's Sunday afternoon, and this is another dairy-filled episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Cutting the Curd is sponsored by Picnic, the brand new barbecue truck down in Battery Park City. And Cutting the Curd is engineered by Nat Wiener and produced by Jack Inslee. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and today I'm broadcasting live from one of my favorite places in the entire world, which is Vermont. Specifically the shores of Lake Champlain, literally on the shores of Lake Champlain at Shelburne Farm. Now, I've been trying to think a little bit about why I love Vermont so much and why it's so great. And, you know, there are a plethora of reasons. It's mountainous, there are no billboards, it's green, and there's literally cheese stashed in just about every nook and cranny across the state. Well, not literally. That would be a little bit gross, but Vermont is home to the largest concentration of American cheesemakers, of American farmstead cheesemakers in the country. There is a higher percentage per capita of cheesemakers here than anywhere else. And here today at Shelburne Farm are over 30 cheesemakers who are all gathered together to spread the good word about artisan cheese for the Vermont Cheesemakers Festival. The first incarnation of the Vermont Cheesemakers Festival was held back in 1996 at Shelburne Farm when the Vermont Butter and Cheese Company received an award from the U.S. Small Business Administration for Small Business Persons of the Year. And since then, there has not been a festival specifically dedicated to Vermont cheese. So this year is a watershed year, and it's very exciting. The festival boasts not only a terrific lineup of cheesemakers, but also winemakers, coffee roasters, bakers, chocolate makers, and a whole other host of artisan food producers, all from the Green Mountain State. So today on our show, we're going to have three guests. We're going to be talking first with Allison Hooper, who is owner of the Vermont Butter and Cheese Company, who is the reason that this festival is taking place. Then we're also going to be talking with Alec from Shelburne Farms to discuss the sort of history of this this incredibly beautiful National Historic Landmark farm. And finally, we're going to be talking with Mark Fisher of Woodcock Farm, who is a cheesemaker and member of the Vermont Cheese Council. And all these folks are going to tell us how this sort of perfect storm of dairy transpired and what is taking place at today's festival. So we're going to take a very quick break, and after the break, we're going to be talking with Allison Hooper of the Vermont Butter and Cheese Company. Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and my first guest today is Allison Hooper, owner and founder of the Vermont Butter and Cheese Company. Thanks for being here, Allison.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
On such short notice, especially. I was leaving frantic messages on Allison's answering machine this week, being like, I know you're really busy organizing the festival, but so it was very nice of you to take time out of your really busy day to talk cheese a little bit.
Well, it's all happening today, so it's now or never.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Now, you said this festival has been in the making for quite some time. Is that right?
Well, we started talking about this just about a year ago.
Okay.
And really, back in June of 2008, 2008, the Vermont Chiefs Council sort of batted around the idea of having some sort of event of our own. And I attended a meeting where there was a fairly informal discussion about that. And then later in the month at Vermont Butter and Cheese, we were trying to think of what we would do for our 25th anniversary of our business. And we thought, well, we should have a party or organize an event. And what really seemed to make sense was to bring back that festival that we had so many years ago in 1996 to Vermont. It seemed like the right time, and we felt that we had the wherewithal to make it happen.
And make it happen you have. It is an incredible thing. And, well, first of all, congratulations on 25 years of your company. That's just, it's incredible.
Yes, thank you.
And so from 1996 to now, there's probably been an immense change in the cheese industry. You know, it seems like Vermont cheese is something that people know well now and know by name, but when you first got started, it wasn't like that.
That was right. Back in 1984, there was Vermont cheddar for sure, but that was about it. And in fact, if you think back, Americans weren't even eating goat cheese back then. So not only did we have to, we weren't even thinking about branding a Vermont product, but just trying to get Americans to put goat cheese in their mouth. That was our first project.
Yeah, I guess I was just thinking, probably to explain a little bit to our listeners, the Vermont Butter and Cheese Company, you know, just explain a bit about the name and the nature of the business. It's not, they do make fabulous butter and amazing fresh dairy products, but fresh goat cheese was really the first point of entry for you guys as a business, isn't that right?
That's right.
And I know that you've told this story a million times, but would you mind telling us a little bit about your experiences and how you went from, you know, how you became a cheesemaker, basically?
Well, I was a French major in college. I went to Connecticut College, and I did a junior year abroad in France and needed working papers, of course couldn't get them, and wrote to organic farmers around the country and landed myself an apprenticeship in Brittany on a farm. We had goats and cows and sheep, and we made different kinds of fresh and aged goat cheeses, Tome-style cow's milk cheese. We made wonderful cultured butter, creme fraiche, fromage blanc. We made charcuterie and saucisson sec with all of the whey fed pigs. It was just a wonderful formation in food, and I really got bitten by the bug and thought, wow, Americans need these cheeses. You know, you live in France, you eat all this wonderful stuff,
yeah,
and you think, how come we're not doing this in the United States?
Yeah, well, just a quick aside, I mean, unbelievable in our age now of just kind of Googlefication to think that you could have literally written letters to cheesemakers across France and made a connection with a family to do that is really is pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I think they were more curious about meeting an American and seeing if they knew how to work than anything else.
So you obviously proved them wrong.
Yeah, yeah. We that's right. I had to try to dissuade them of all their belief systems of Americans and hamburgers and bad food and bad politics.
Absolutely. It's funny that's a stereotype that endures. I was actually in France just 4 years ago now, making cheese, and same thing. They're like, you're an American, like, that wants to work, and more sort of shockingly to me, they were just shocked that, you know, I was not an obese person.
Right,
being
exactly.
An American, and I was like, oh, well, you know, that's, like, you know, it's a problem, but it's not everything, you know?
Right.
But so that's great. So you came back to Vermont, and what were you doing in the meantime? How did you make the jump from going to France to come back to Vermont to starting to make your own goat cheese?
Well, I had worked in Brittany. I worked also in the Ardèche. We made picodon, and I lived on a farm making goat cheese and honey. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, a region where there's lots of lavender, so it's great for honey production. Back in the U.S., I grew up in New Jersey, worked on a fairly large goat farm taking care of the animals for a couple who were selling in the goat cheese and goat milk at the green markets when they first started in New York City.
Oh, wow.
And I had a connection to Vermont because my grandmother lived here and thought to myself, you know, I really want to do this for myself. And so I kind of wandered my way up here. In fact, ended up here at Shelburne Farms and tried to encourage them to start a goat herd and make cheese. Well, that was a little bit far out for Shelburne Farms in 1984. But I did meet my business partner, Bob, and he had just gotten an MBA and wanted to get into the dairy business. We were both working at the Agency of Agriculture, and so we started the business together and are still partners today.
That is, yeah, that's an incredible story. Sometimes partnerships like that in your life are just kismet, you know, two people in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you tell us a bit about how your business has grown over the years from being a very small kind of, you know, hands-on operation when it was just you and Bob to what you have today?
Yeah, we started converted a milk house on the farm where I live today. There aren't any animals. There are a few dairy heifers there. But I made the cheese 7 days a week, and I collected milk from backyard goat farms that had to get a license to ship milk. And away we went. We didn't have enough money to buy a farm, and we weren't married, and Bob had a family of his own, so it wasn't practical for us to do farmstead cheesemaking. So our premise all along was to have a creamery and buy from farms in Vermont. So we had to develop that milk supply and really try to get farmers to want to produce milk for us, goat milk.
Yeah, I imagine that was not an easy hurdle
not,
to
and
overcome.
It's still a difficult hurdle to overcome. If you, you know, at the time, since nobody ate goat cheese and there wasn't much milk, we had to we started the business with bank loans and needed cash, so we started making creme fraiche. And that seemed like something that we could do easily because we were able to get cream. And, again, Americans really didn't know very much about creme fraiche. Consumers didn't eat that. But French chefs in New York City certainly knew what it was, and we brought it to them, and they said, yeah, we're about buying local, and you guys are doing a good job. And so that was really what the business that fueled the growth of the goat cheese.
That's really interesting. So chefs, you know, I guess we live in an age now where chefs are kind of more famous than ever and have more influence than ever. But, you know, without those early adopters to kind of, you know, be interested in these types of products and educate people through taste, none of this would have been possible.
That's right. That's right.
So wow. So you've grown from having a predominantly wholesale business to restaurants in New York City, and now, you know, you can find Vermont butter and cheese products all over the place. How many different farms do you work with currently to source your goat milk or your cream and everything?
Well, we have about 20 farms here in Vermont. We buy some milk from outside of the state, also from co-ops. But here in Vermont, we contract directly with these farms. They can be milking anywhere from 50 goats to 500. And we have someone on staff whose sole job is to work with the farms. She's out in their barns every day helping them with nutrition and breeding and business planning and genetics. And so that has been a real help to the farms to produce quality milk.
That's amazing. So in addition to being a business partner, you are a partner in education and a partner in just developing a solid farm in general for these folks.
Yeah, it's without the milk, there's no cheese. So we're heavily vested in their success.
Yeah. No, that's an amazing reciprocal relationship that I just don't think exists in many other businesses.
Yeah.
So that's really incredible. Mm-hmm. And so over the past, 25 years, so you've grown to working with that many farms. You're supporting a huge number of small family farms across the state. I mean, you just have to be so proud about that.
Well, it's a good feeling, you know, although we try not to overstate what we do. It's still a difficult business. Some of them are more profitable than others, and, Eve farming today is a very entrepreneurial activity. It isn't one size fits all. So we don't want to give farmers a false sense of security or hope that if they start milking goats, they will automatically be successful. So it's a process. It's been a long evolution of the industry, and we're a lot further along than we were 25 years ago, but it really feels like there's a long way to go.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Over the, you've got 25 years of wonderful history behind you. Where do you see sort of the next steps for you and your company and your farming endeavors here in the state of Vermont?
Well, I think that I would characterize our business as having spent 25 years sort of getting ourselves prepared for a marketplace that is ready to buy these kinds of products. For the early years, we sold almost exclusively to restaurants because it wasn't a consumer kind of product, and we certainly didn't have the resources to educate consumers. Now, that said, we slowly grew the business, and we enjoyed the slow growth because we could then train ourselves and train others into how to make good cheese and, provide a consistent product. Very fast growth is risky, although, we're in pretty good shape to grow now and to really be able to get these products out there. Our experience today is people really want Fromage Blanc. They want to, have high-fat cultured butter.
Yay.
That's really flavorful and does wonderful things in pastry and sauces. They're not afraid of eating fat. So we're just trying to brace ourselves for being able to provide that. And, of course, there is a lot more competition. There are a lot of other people doing what we do, so it's mm-hmm. not as if they're all going to come knocking on our door, but it is a changing and evolving market.
Yeah. I mean, I know that a lot of these farms present at the Cheesemakers Festival today, it's very tough to get their cheeses, whether it's in Vermont, whether it's out of the state or even right here in their own backyard. Sometimes, the demand just so far outstrips the supply. Have you guys felt that as well at Vermont Butter and Cheese?
No, we haven't, because we buy cream from the St. Almond's Co-op. They're a small, I'd like to call them kind of a progressive co-op, near the Canadian border. They provide RBST-free cream for Ben & Jerry's and Stonyfield. Mm-hmm. So we've been lucky to be able to sort of ride those coattails a bit, and they will make very high fat cream for us. That's not usual to be able to buy a sort of customized product. They have cream. So that's good. The goat milk, we can grow slowly, but I think that what we try to do is be selective about the kinds of customers that we want to target, those that we can service well, that are willing to pay a little higher price for the cheese because we pay more for milk here typically than other parts of the country. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, that's just amazing that you've built that almost that culinary vocabulary into people's, day-to-day lives, be it a product like creme fraiche or cultured butter or mm-hmm. your goat cheeses. That's just amazing. Now, you've also just written a book, isn't that right?
That's right, In a Cheesemaker's Kitchen.
Okay.
And really the premise of the book, there were two things that we wanted to do. One, and probably most importantly, is to really give consumers ways to use these products every day. We are not pretentious. We don't want cheese to be something fancy. And so I use creme fraiche in everything. And it tastes great. And people say to me, why does this taste so good? Well, it's creme fraiche that I put in there. And so we want everyone to know about that. So we created a book with a bunch of recipes that are very simple to make. Every recipe has a nice photograph. And we asked some of our chef customers to contribute. And we kind of thought, well, we wonder if they would go along. And they did it so willingly. It was just really gratifying. Eric Repair and Dan Barber and Michelle Richard and Mireille Guglielmo. And so it was just really, really nice to have those big names in the book, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who really sell it.
Sure.
Not Vermont butter and cheese.
Sure.
But we also told our story, and it's very short and sweet, but I felt that we wanted to tell the story of bootstrapping this kind of pioneering business and how we did it 25 years ago, where there wasn't a market and it wasn't forgiving and nobody really cared about American cheese. Terroir and localvorism were not part of our vernacular. So it was
foreign
just sort
word.
Of a funny, yep. So, and just a little bit about cheese. How is it made?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's fantastic. You said it's called In a Cheesemaker's Kitchen?
Yes.
And where can people find the book?
Well, it will be in stores in September. It's published by Countryman Press, which is a division of Norton, and I think it's actually listed on Amazon now. So
fantastic. Mm-hmm. So anyone out there who's ever wondered what the heck to do with creme fraiche, I know it was certainly on my list of, like, scratch-your-head ingredients for many, many years. Now, you know, you can go pick up a copy of In a Cheesemaker's Kitchen and have, inspiration at the ready. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, and above all, thank you for, you know, making these wonderful products and aiding and facilitating all these cheesemakers for coming together. It's just been a wonderful experience.
Well, it's great. It's great to be able to package a little bit of Vermont and put it out into a larger marketplace and just watch the people come. It's just been really, really great. It was something that was like the water broke and the baby's being born. And, you know, we needed to do it this year, so it's great.
Absolutely. Well, can we look forward to another one next year, do you think?
I think so. Well, look at the website. It's vtcheesefest.com, and we'll put a date up there soon. So
that's great. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Anne.
Okay, thanks, Allison. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, your source for all things dairy on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our sponsor today is Picnic, which is Will Goldfarb's new barbecue adventure, which you can find down in the southern part of Manhattan in Battery Park. I'm here today at the beautiful Shelburne Farms in Vermont for the Vermont Cheesemakers Festival, the second of its kind, but Allison assures us there will be more on the way. And our next guest today is Mark Fisher, who is a wonderful cheesemaker and a good friend, and also a member and acting officiary, I don't know what I would say, of the Vermont Cheese Council.
Yes. Hello, Anne.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be on the show.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. So it probably was, we said it was a little bit of a welcome escape to get out of that coach barn for a little while. It was getting kind of steamy in there.
Yes, it was. And you get tired after a while of serving people cheese.
What cheese, can you tell us a little bit about the cheeses that you make and what you brought with you to the festival today?
Well, we are primarily a sheep dairy, so we make cheeses from sheep's milk, although we have extended our product line by buying cow's milk during the winter months. So today what we had with us, it was a Blumy Rind cheese made with sheep's milk called Summer Snow, which is available.
Absolutely delicious.
And you can find it in Lower Manhattan at Saks Will Be Cheese. And then another cheese we call Timberdoodle, which is a mix of sheep and cow's milk.
And now Timberdoodle, can you just tell us about the name for that cheese? Because I get people coming to the shop all the time that look at it, and then they do a double take, and then they're like, where did that name come from?
Some people think it's another breed of dog, some mixed with a poodle and something else. No, it's actually the name of our farm is Woodcock Farm, which comes from the original owners of the farm. They had gone out of the dairy business years before we were able to purchase it. And so playing off of that, it's funny because I didn't actually know. I think someone must have told us. But the bird woodcock is often referred to by people in New England as a timberdoodle. And so there you have it. The name of the cheese is Timberdoodle.
Maybe it makes that kind of sound when it flies.
No. Like a wood chicken or something? I don't know.
Well, the cheese is very, very tasty. It always sort of brings a laugh, so I like selling people the Timberdoodle.
Well, the names are important, and they're always tricky to try and come up with, but it's fun.
I think my all-time favorite from you guys is Humble Pie.
Yeah, that's a name or a term you hear a lot, and it's just whenever I heard it, I thought, well, that's something I think I'd like to make a cheese, that would resemble that somehow, and finally we did come up with something that fit the bill.
Yeah. How has this festival been for you? Are you pleased at the outcome? Are you shocked by the number of people that came? What are your impressions?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, we're a small producer. I mean, I would think that probably 75% of what you hear of the Vermont cheesemakers are all very small producers. We have mixed reactions to lots of customers because we don't have a lot of product for all the customers. But on the other hand, it's always, it's a moral support type thing to see that the audience for cheese making and cheese production is so broad, and you really get, and people are very enthusiastic about it. They want to know more about what you're doing and how you're doing it, and some of them have traveled to Europe, so they bring that into play, and they're beginning to see their country as something as like what they've seen overseas, and all those things help support your efforts day to day, which you go back to the farm, and some days it's actually very pleasant to go back to the routine of the farm. But you remember this event and how many people came, and at the same time, these events are always great for us because we get to be in the same room with all the other cheesemakers who we don't often see enough. In fact, a few of us decided that we needed to have a festival of our own without any customers.
Big old dinner party, no customers.
There, right?
You guys are definitely, cheesemakers are kind of like the foodie, dork equivalent of rock stars. I mean, you guys make delicious products. People are really interested in farming as a way of life and how, just the alchemy of how cheese is made. So to be able to meet the cheesemaker is really a big deal. And it's funny, we were actually talking about the cheese festival sold out. People were being turned away at the doors. There were no more tickets.
Man,
and there was actually
rushing the fences.
Yeah, it was a non-violent day, luckily. But there was actually a bus that came up from New York City, organized by Murray's Cheese, and it's like Woodstock. We were talking, it's like the equivalent of people going to like a rock concert. They're coming to see the cheesemakers and eat cheese at Shelburne Farm. It's really incredible.
Yeah.
You don't see yourself as a rock star? No.
No, not quite. But, no, I see the similarity somehow, and I think that well, there's obviously a big interest now in all the food movement, and the cheese production represents a good part of that.
And just hearing you talk a little bit about making the comparison between people who've traveled to Europe and then people coming here and recognizing cheese as being something that's every bit as good. Vermont is very unique in its kind of density of artisan cheesemakers. And I think, at least in my mind, it seems like the Vermont Cheese Council has a lot to do with that. Can you tell us a little bit about the Vermont Cheese Council and what it does as an organization?
Yes, the council is basically a framework for all the cheesemakers to be involved with. You know, we have a website that gives everyone a page, and so it's sort of a central location if you want to find out about cheesemakers in Vermont. It's listed in different categories of milk types and cheese types. It also acts as sort of a vehicle to represent cheesemakers at different events that are held in Vermont. You know, it's been growing. It's primarily a volunteer organization. You know, speaking of Allison, she was actually spearheaded the development of the Cheese Council as well years and years ago.
Okay. Yeah, she is like a Vermont cheese powerhouse.
We just sort of wait to see what she does next. We follow suit. Like, for instance, this festival idea, I mean, we've talked about it for years, and every time another state would have a festival, we'd all grumble and say, well, if they can have a festival, we should be having a festival. But these things are very difficult to organize, and without the infrastructure of Vermont Butter and Cheese and Allison's help, this would not have happened. We, as the council, are certainly glad to support this type of activity, but it was well beyond the scope of any kind of volunteer group. But the council still tries to represent Vermont cheesemakers as best as possible and as evenly as possible. I mean, it's funny. As time goes on, the organizations change. In the beginning, it was all about a lot of volunteers, and when there was an event, people would volunteer to show up and volunteer to, you know, give their cheese away. And now, as time goes on, we're trying to get more of a paid director, someone that would be specifically responsible for those types of activities. And people have gotten more involved in their businesses, so it's harder to get away and do so much volunteer work. But the council still is really the center point of Vermont cheese.
Now, in addition to doing sort of marketing and doing the kinds of things that you're talking about, you know, making sure that Vermont cheese has a presence at lots of different events around the state, is there also a kind of, I don't know, are there any resources built in, like a forum for cheesemakers to come together and talk about different issues that you might be having or sharing, you know, so-and-so has some equipment for sale or so, you know, how does it work to benefit the cheesemakers within the council as well?
No, I would say pretty directly, no. I mean, we have tried those things. We had a chat line that we chatted one night, and I don't think anybody ever got on it again. And, you know, it's more of a, for those types of activity, although there is, in fact, that's my responsibility right now with the council is in charge of technical assistance. So we have some resources for assistance. We have brought in cheese making professionals that we've held workshops. Now we have a resource here in Vermont, which is unique, called VIAC, which you may have spoken about.
We haven't spoken about it yet. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that as well, because VIAC, what does it stand
it's
for?
It's the Vermont Institute for Artisan Cheese. And there's a particularly young French cheesemaker there who knows more about cheesemaking than probably, you know, all the people in Vermont together. But it's a unique resource for us here, as well as they're available for anyone across the country. But you know, we do have them right here in our backyard. So they become the source for most technical assistance. But the council, again, we do have some funds that we can funnel towards those types of activities. I think we need to grow, and we need to make those things more accessible somehow.
But even as just a resource as it exists now, a listing, a comprehensive listing of Vermont farms or artisan cheesemakers, it's great. If you Google the Vermont Cheese Council,
VermontCheese.com.
VermontCheese.com. You can check out the website, and it'll show you literally, by milk type, all the different artisan cheese producers across the state. And it's a pretty impressive group. It's probably grown quite a bit since you guys started making cheese.
It has. I think in recent years, actually, we've added probably another 10 cheesemakers in the last 3 years.
That's great.
Yep, it's good. There seems to be, as the cheesemaking, although, again, I say most of these producers still are relatively small, but I think the interest in cheese is growing equally as fast, so there's no marketing issues.
Definitely. You guys,
sell
all you make.
Right. There's not, I was trying to be polite today, but most of the people had asked me if there was any cheese available. I should have just said no, but I didn't. Just keep them hanging on, thinking Sunday there'll be more cheese out there.
Yeah. You just got to come up to the farm and raid the cheese cave yourself.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I won't do that.
No, but if people come to the farm, they get first choice. They get better service.
So, let's see. Has it been exciting to you to be a part of the conference? Are you glad you came? Are you, do you have a good day? Do you sell a lot of cheese?
It's been very exciting. Like I said, it's fun to just be with the cheesemakers, talking to them about, some of the issues they've had over the summer. We haven't sold quite as much as I had hoped, but it's not a forum really to sell that much when you have 40 cheesemakers together. Everybody makes good cheese,
spread the love around.
They're going to be buying other products, and it's also a place where I'm finding farmers markets this year to be very good, and because people are more and more coming to them for the purpose of buying their weekend or a week supplies, and here they were, as they started at the beginning of the line, it might have taken them 2 or 3 hours to get to the final cheesemaker, and the cheese they bought in the first one might be melting in their bag by the time they reached the end. So I wasn't even encouraging really purchasing cheese until you were ready to leave. But
that bodes well for me. I can take more back in
in
my car. No, I'm just kidding.
Again, these types of events are wonderful to have, and I'm sure that we'll try and continue to do it again next year.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to get out of the sweltering coach barn and up here to the more breezy
right.
farm barn.
A fan.
Yeah.
We're not fans, but a fan. So.
One fan is better than no fans.
Well,
thank you so much, and I'm definitely looking forward to next year's festival and hopefully some delicious aged sheep's milk cheese in the meantime from Woodcock Farm.
All right, Ann, thank you.
All right, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're good.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Cutting the Curd is sponsored today by Picnic, Will Goldfarb's delicious new barbecue venture down in Battery Park. And we are engineered by Nat Wiener and produced by Jack Inslee. We are broadcasting live today from the Vermont Cheesemakers Festival, which is up at Shelburne Farms in Shelburne, Vermont. And we are lucky enough to have Alec Webb with us, who has been with Shelburne Farm for quite some time, who is going to talk with us a little bit about the history of Shelburne Farm and what makes it such a unique and wonderful place. Thanks for being with us today, Alec.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So can you just kind of give us first of all, what do you do for Shelburne Farm? How long have you been here, and how did you become involved with it?
Let's see. I'm the president of the nonprofit organization that is responsible for the stewardship of the whole property here and for offering all the educational programs that the farm sponsors. And I've been in that capacity since 1988.
Wow.
But prior to that, I actually was involved in starting our first summer camp program in 1970, just getting out of high school. So I've been here a long time.
So are you born and raised Vermonter?
I was born in Burlington, grew up on the farm here, and I'm descended from the founders of Shelburne Farms. It was my great-grandparents who came to this area and put together the property as an agricultural estate. But my generation was the one that urged my father to put the whole property into a nonprofit environmental education organization.
Wow, wow. So, yeah, William Seward Webb, I guess, was the founder of Shelburne Farm, is that?
He and his wife, he married Lila Vanderbilt, so it's her inheritance, basically, that they used to create this incredible property.
Wow, okay.
Out in the 1880s.
Wow, okay. Okay, and so at that time, this, of course, has always been one of the most beautiful parts of, you know, Vermont and the country and anywhere in the world. How did this particular parcel come to be in the, how did they come upon this parcel of land? Was there anything here before, or?
It was a small farming community along the lake in the 1880s, and I think he was working for his father-in-law. I should know the exact story, but I'm a little weak in the history, actually. But it's funny. But anyway, he was coming up to this area, and they eventually were looking at purchasing the railroad system that served this area. But they also, I think, liked to come up to hunt in the Adirondacks. But they just fell in love with this particular part of the world. And after she inherited her fortune at that time from her father, they used that to purchase these farms in this area, because I guess the agricultural community was having a bit of a hard time economically, so they were able to acquire quite a landholding here, almost 4,000 acres.
4,000 acres.
Yep.
Wow. And is the 4,000 acre, is that still the size of Shelburne Farm today, or has that changed?
The nonprofit of today owns 1,400 acres.
Wow.
And kind of a land trust type situation.
That's incredible. And I was also reading that of the acreage, 400 acres are certified by the Forestry Council. Is that right?
We run a sustainable forestry operation that produces timber and firewood. Our main agricultural activity is the Brown Swiss Dairy, that is a grass-based dairy operation that produces milk for our cheese-making operation.
That's fantastic. And how big is that herd?
We're milking close to 120 cows right now.
Okay, that's a lot of milk.
Yeah, we're on the large end of the artisan cheesemaking scale, I'd say, in Vermont at this point.
Yeah. So it's funny, as I was kind of learning a little bit more about the history of Shelburne Farm, I was kind of drawn to certain parallels, you know, especially with Blue Hill at Stone Barns. It seems like this was like, you know, 100 years before the fact. Your family was kind of having the same idea of building a farm that was built around conservation and stewardship of the land, and now educating people, which is pretty fantastic and pretty rare. So in addition to the dairy and the forestry, can you tell us a little bit about the education and sort of more community-based programs that you guys do here?
Yep. Well, we offer a whole range of opportunities for the local community to enjoy the working landscape here. But the reason the nonprofit was created was to offer programs that would really raise consciousness around environmental issues and environmental stewardship. And hopefully what goes on here at Shelburne Farms would help inspire a conservation ethic is kind of our current mission statement. But by that, we mean much more than just conserving land and natural resources. It's really, it's how do people interact and use
and
carefully and thoughtfully those resources to maintain a healthy environment for not only people, but all living creatures on the earth.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's really noble, especially because, I mean, people think that they can feel kind of detached from how they can make a difference or make a decision that's going to be beneficial for the environment if they're not farming or if they're not directly involved somehow with the land. But that's amazing that you guys have taken that step to kind of put it in, you know, everyone's consciousness.
Well, we try to offer as many ways that people can have meaningful connections with either farming, agricultural practices, or operations in natural resources and in nature, just thinking that, and starting as early an age as possible, that those kind of experiences really translate into a conservation or environmental or a sustainability ethic, whatever word you want to put on it, but really an understanding. Once you understand where things that support your life come from, then you're more apt to really care about taking care of them.
Absolutely. And so how old are the kids that are involved in your education programs? Is it from kids to adults, or is there...
Yeah, we have programs for starting from preschool right on up through adults, but our primary focus has been on working with educators because that's really the way to reach the broadest audience really around the world. We try to give educators the skills and resources that they can use in their own communities to create meaningful learning opportunities using the resources in their own communities.
So you're serving as a model that then can be, you know, hopefully, you know, with the right sort of mental tuning, can be applied to any place that...
Yeah, we've had, just this last week, we had some educators from a college in Japan. Our program director has been involved with the exchange of educators in China and Japan in this country, working with our partner, the Institute for Sustainable Communities, and it's really looking at education for sustainability internationally and creating a network of educators who all are kind of working towards that same outcome.
That's, well, more and more, I mean, everyone has to be concerned about it because the world's resources certainly aren't getting any more plentiful by the day.
Yes, yeah. And healthy food systems really underlie healthy societies, so that kind of ties it back to, you know, as we work towards developing and being part of a healthy local food system in our own area, that's a universal need all around the world.
Absolutely. And in the end, it's you know, maybe it's more fun to watch a cow get milked and eat a piece of delicious cheese than you know, sit through an hour-long movie about climate change or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, you're really showing people that, you know, how it happens and letting them enjoy that directly in the cheese that you guys produce.
Yeah. And also, and for kids to in this area to be learning about the woodlands and, you know, in their own neighborhoods and backyards, as opposed to the more abstract, you know, concerns about rainforest destruction, whatever. But if you start from where you are, then they can, as they get older, they can take in those broader, more global environmental concerns.
Yeah. Well, and this might be a bit of an odd segue, I guess, but I was just thinking about trees and woodlands and the, you know, how I'm woefully ignorant of a lot of that kind of stuff. I actually just bought a book the other day about tree identification in North America because, you know, I realized I really don't know that much. And this place especially has an incredible landscape. The grounds were designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, is that right?
Yeah. And I was just looking at the recent National Geographic magazine where they had New York, Manhattan in the 1600s in Manhattan today, but looking at Central Park, you know, it's what a significant piece of the island that is, and us thinking about Olmsted and his involvement here, and the Chelburn Farms is another one of those special green spaces that really is valuable, I think, to our society. Even though we're not obviously in the urban environment of New York, we're still, this place is, as development keeps happening around us, becomes kind of more of an oasis that is pretty special.
Yeah. And you personally, what was your kind of, what was your passion, you know, growing up? Was it more the farming aspect? Was it more of the nature and conservation? What inspired you most with regards to this place? And
Well, my main memories are helping around the dairy operation as a kid during the summer, haying and doing chores. So it was really, it's pretty simple. It's just growing up in a beautiful place around the working farm operations and the people who are working in the farm were strong influences on me, and I think I just developed a kind of a love for this particular farm and land, and that's translated into wanting to see it offer wonderful experiences to as many people as we can, and to keep a tradition of agriculture alive, and to have this place become a resource for learning about caring for the environment.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, in forming the nonprofit, you said it was you as well as your siblings, or how
yep.
did that come about?
There were six in my generation, and we were right in the middle. So I turned 18 in 1970. So we were all kind of coming out of the 60s and had the common experience of growing up on the farm and caring about agriculture and the land, but also a concern about what was going on in the world, in the broader world, and just concerned that if the normal course of events would see this place become basically a high-end subdivision, and that just didn't seem to be a direction that any of us wanted to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's congratulations. It's an amazing place. The first time I was here was for the American Cheese Society in 1997 when it was in Burlington, and 2007. I'm sorry. Just coming up to the breeding barn where they had the big Cheesemakers Festival, I was like, my jaw was dragging on the ground behind me that such a place of beauty would be open to, you know, such a wonderfully warm, you know, community events. It's just a really special place.
Yeah, and the, you know, one of the challenges, of course, is figuring out how to make it financially sustainable as well as environmentally sustainable, and that's how the cheese fits in, and that there'd been a dairy herd here for many years, but we first started bottling raw milk as a way to add some value
okay.
to the milk in the late 70s, and then that evolved into the cheese, and the advantage of going with the cheddar cheese was that we could turn the raw milk into a, you know, not non-perishable product, but a product that was a lot more resilient in terms of getting to a broader market than the raw fluid milk. So that was the early 80s, and it's still today it's in a really important part of supporting the nonprofit venture, and every dollar that, you know, our customers spend on the cheese goes into supporting the idea for this place and our education programs and keeping the whole venture moving
yeah.
forward.
Yeah, and you know, the cheese is cheddar cheese, of course, is like, you know, Vermonters, like, you know, it's in their bones, practically. So to have that connection with an industry that rings so true with much of the state is very special connection too.
Yeah, it's a great cheese. You know, I mean, you know, there are also a lot of. I mean, the cheeses at the Coach Barn today, there are just so many great soft cheeses or other beautiful artisan cheeses, and the cheddar for us, we're kind of, you know, the farmhouse English tradition, I think, we're building on, and it just seemed like a good traditional cheese. And with our scale, which is larger than a typical artisan operation, it just seemed like a cheese that we could do really well.
Cheese you can do well. Like you said, you can store it and age it, and it gets better as it ages, and you can use up all that milk because, 125 cows, or 120 cows, that's a lot of milk.
Yeah, we're making it. Of course, we're pasture-based, so we aren't pushing grain feeding, so our yields aren't what they might have been if we were just a commercially oriented dairy. But it is a lot of milk.
Yeah. Well, if reincarnation's real, I hope I'm reincarnated as a brown Swiss cow at Shelburne Farm because they have it good. I was walking around the pasture this morning, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah. Well, they're a great animal. We also are kind of our, in terms of the economic sustainability, the tourism, the kind of ecotourism is another important aspect of the farm. So we're kind of like the Swiss model in a sense where our inn and restaurant is open from May through October, and people come here really to enjoy the beauty of the landscape and the mountains and the view across the lake. And, of course, so we've got the brown Swiss cows and cheese making, so it's kind of a little...
It's a whole...
You know,
the
Swiss have been, in a sense, of kind of a model for us, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, that's a whole... It's a whole package. You can come and stay at the inn, eat at the restaurant, be able to learn a little bit about food production, enjoy, obviously, the beautiful nature. All I can say, I guess, is thank you for opening it up to such a wonderful myriad of experiences, and thank you for, hosting events like this, because it's really just, I was talking to Mark before, and we were comparing it a little bit to Woodstock, all the people coming up from the city and just making this pilgrimage to eat good Vermont cheese, and to be able to do it in a venue like this is just great.
Yeah, well, these types of events just fit so perfectly here, and we're always very pleased and honored to have so many great people coming to the farm.
Yeah. Well, I think we are almost out of time. My usual half-hour show has become an hour today because we had such wonderful, fascinating people to talk to. But thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to tell us about the farm and the history and everything you guys do here.
Great. Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
Really appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see you next or 2 weeks from now on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned.